Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. The go-home show to Sunday's WrestleMania Backlash. And I got to tell you, there was nothing horribly bad about last night's Monday Night Raw. Nothing so egregiously bad that it makes you want to tear your hair out. But there was also nothing very, very good. This was a very, very plain show for a go-home show. Made no huge errors, but it caused no huge expectations for Sunday either. And really, that's the job of a go-home show, is to get you excited, pump you up for the big event. Didn't really do that for me. Let's start with the actual breaking news from Raw, and that is that during the Sheamus-Humberto Carrillo match, Humberto Carrillo attempted a sunset flip powerbomb from inside the ring to outside on the arena floor. And unfortunately, I'm not really sure who to blame. I've watched this several times. He didn't carry Sheamus all the way over, or Sheamus didn't carry himself all the way over or something, but rather than to come down, and for this move, the majority of your weight comes down between the legs of the person who's giving you the sunset flip, so in this case it would be Humberto Carrillo's leg. The majority of your weight you obviously hit with your shoulders on the mat or on the ground or wherever this is happening. Didn't happen this time, and Sheamus's entire body weight came down on Humberto Carrillo's midsection to lower body, right near the groin area, and instantaneously, the minute I saw it, I knew Humberto Carrillo was hurt. Didn't know how bad he was hurt, but I knew he was hurt. Absolutely went wrong. Could have been really disastrous, because I don't need to tell any of you guys what could happen if a 280-pound man from that distance comes down with all of his body weight on your very, very, very lower stomach. So I'm thinking to myself, geez, this could be really bad for Carrillo. He instantly started to grab his hip more than anything else. And you could see Sheamus crawl over toward him and literally ask him if he was okay. The referee asked him if he was okay. And then within seconds after that, they called this match off. Now, I was pretty worried. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought, there could be some major problems. There could be some surgery in Humberto Carrillo's future. But here's the good news. Apparently, Carrillo is not injured. He was just momentarily hurt. And there's no lasting injury to this. They were saying he was walking around backstage, and he told people he could wrestle today if he needed to wrestle. So there is no major injury to Humberto Carrillo, thankfully. But man, you want to talk about dodging a bullet. Mike, the very first time I watched this, and I watched it like several times, I rewound it and kept watching it. I don't know how he avoided having some serious problems with his lower extremities.
Right. I don't see how he did it either. And look, this was a match. I'll get back to the possible injury in a minute, but this was a really decent match. You know, he got in some pretty good spots, some pretty good shots on Sheamus. Sheamus does his usual job, you know, looking like he's really fighting. I mean, there are some shots that Carrillo's size, and Carrillo's not a big guy. I mean, he's what, maybe 210 pounds, if that, right, Carrillo?
Well, so a little. You can see how much more muscle
Right. So you've got that going on. But, again, like I said, Sheamus looks like he's fighting. He looks, I mean, he has that thing. It's going to be hard. I know they're trying to make him a heel or whatever, but it's going to be hard for people not to fall for Sheamus, not to cheer for Sheamus.
Because he's delivering sort of that old school philosophy of wrestling, which is it should look like it hurts, it should look like you're fighting, it should look real. Once again, Sheamus probably goes into that. I don't know. Sheamus has dropped some weight, and Carrillo has obviously gained a little. But I would still say Sheamus goes in 260. And he's coming off the ring apron. So you're talking about, you know, a foot or two. And with the emphasis of the sunset flip, somebody that heavy coming down on the lowest part of your midsection. Again, my first thoughts were, uh-oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to be some sort of a rupture. This is going to be internal. This is not going to be good. Not going to be good at all. And if all he suffered was a bruised hip that he walked off backstage, you can thank your lucky stars. Now, I'm not into blaming anybody for this. It's just one of those things that happened. But if you had to put the blame on somebody, I guess you'd have to put it on Sheamus, because when you're doing this move, you got to know, you got to get a little bit of distance when you flip over. Otherwise, you're going to land on the guy, quite obviously, in a sunset flip. You know, you have to land between his legs. You can't land on his stomach. And it's not the guy carrying you over that has the emphasis of carrying you over, obviously, because no one could do that. You got to do it yourself. So I'm sure Sheamus isn't feeling too good about this. Last thing he wants to do is hurt somebody at this stage and be considered unsafe, even though, you know, he's always been known as being stiff, but you don't want to be unsafe. There's a very big difference between stiff and unsafe. But this is just one of these freak things that happened. You know, I don't know whether he couldn't get enough momentum or Carrillo, you know, didn't carry him over quite as strongly as he thought he might get carried over, so he didn't put that emphasis behind it. It's hard to say exactly what happened. Just one of these things, I guess, you got to chalk up to, you know, crap happens. But we're happy that Carrillo's okay. Todd, I'm sure you saw it. It looked pretty bad.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, when I seen that last night with Carrillo, oh, crap. He fell. He got landed wrong outside of the ring. And right away, the referee called the match off. And like you said, the things like that happen. It's an accident. Wasn't on purpose or anything. It just happened.
I'm not going to mince any words. My first thought was that he just got his nuts crushed. And I don't know whether he was wearing a cup or I don't know whatever, but I was thinking, oh, my God, he's probably got a rupture. He's probably got a big issue. I just thought, oh, my God, if that had happened to me, I know what I would have thought is, oh, Jesus. So he can be very lucky. Consider himself very lucky that he has no actual injury. So good for him. It was a good match. It was a very good match. And no one's ever said, by the way, that Carrillo's not a good wrestler. He's more than fine in the ring. He just doesn't seem to have a lot of charisma or personality. I don't know. He's missing something. And I got to tell you that happens quite often with the Lucha-style wrestlers, is their personalities involve, 90% of the time, their personalities involve the mask and the gimmick behind the mask. And when they don't have masks or they don't have that kind of stuff, personality is not something they really thrive on in a lot of these Mexican wrestling federations. They go for the traditional luchador type thing. So they're not really taught all this kind of stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, that's going to hold Carrillo back until he gets used to the American style of wrestling. But anyway, we start out with Asuka, Dana Brooke, and Mandy Rose against the tag team champions Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler, and Charlotte Flair. Jesus, another way to get Dana Brooke and Mandy Rose against the tag team champions. I'm telling you, I've had enough of this division. I've just had enough of it. By the way, it's making Oscar look silly. The whole thing's just making Oscar look silly. It's a shame. It's not helping Charlotte that much either, to be honest. And as we go through this match, suddenly there appears on the stage an entire swing set. And there is Alexa Bliss and her doll Lily swinging on the swing set. Now, this is what I mean when I say this is something you can never do in front of the fans, because quite obviously they stopped the match and had the swing set constructed, or they had it constructed before, or whatever the hell they did. But it doesn't just magically, boof, appear like on Bewitched. But for the benefit of the people in the audience, that's what we're expected to believe. Now, I just want people to understand that wrestling doesn't have to be 100% true to life. It's a show. I get it. But if you're in the ring and you're a serious competitor and you walked down that aisle a moment ago and there was no swing set, and you turn around and there's an entire swing set, that's probably going to be the end of you even considering finishing a match, let alone wrestling the person who was responsible for it. I mean, you'd have a lot of questions, wouldn't you? It wouldn't just be like, well, that's interesting. Oh, well, back to the match. I mean, at some point you'd be like, what in the blue hell is going on here? I don't care if that was my mortal enemy in the ring. I'd be like, whoa, did you just see this? The hell is this all about? It's impossible. They're going to make a mockery out of the women's division. That's what they're going to do. And they're going to ruin. It's already ruined. They've already ruined the Fiend and Alexa Bliss angle. It's ruined because we see where it's going. And here's where it's going. Miraculously out of the thin air, Shayna Baszler can't walk. Oh, my leg went out from under me. Oh, my other leg went out from under me. And that's the end of that. And there is Alexa Bliss laughing about it. So I guess she put some kind of a curse on Shayna Baszler. I guess Shayna Baszler is going to be her first target. I don't know. Or maybe she said, I'm out here to watch a person. So I don't know who's going to be your first target. But I do know this. If you can cause somebody's legs not to function in the middle of a match, who's going to beat you? If you have that sort of supernatural power, then I would love to know how anyone is going to actually compete with you. This is silly. It's jumped the shark again, just like they always do. I've had enough of this with the WWE. You had a fantastic character in the cult leader Bray Wyatt. You couldn't let well enough alone. It's not enough that he's a cult leader. He has to make bugs appear on the mat through weird lighting. He has to have a tractor run itself. He has to be able to do all kinds of supernatural things. Who said Bray Wyatt was a supernatural character? Never was in NXT. Oh, but here he is, ruined. And so you think that the WWE would say, okay, well, look, we made a mistake. We never should have made Bray Wyatt a supernatural character. We probably ruined him, and that sucks. And then you come up with this brilliant Bray Wyatt and the Fiend situation, and what do? Let's make him a supernatural character again. Only this time, let's make him a supernatural character that can't beat anybody. He'll lose his first match in Hell in a Cell against Seth Rollins. He'll lose to Bill Goldberg in Saudi Arabia. And he'll lose to Randy Orton at a event, not only in the Inferno match, but also when he comes back trying to seek his revenge. So you've ruined that character. Then you had Alexa Bliss as a brainwashed half puppet, half groupie to Bray Wyatt. Oh, no, not good enough. Have to make her a supernatural character too. When will you understand? Did you see The Undertaker do this? Everyone always says, well, The Undertaker is a supernatural character. Really? Well, did The Undertaker just wave his hand and have somebody just fly across the ring? Did The Undertaker cause the ring lights to crash down on somebody? The supernatural aspect of The Undertaker was, number one, he got power from the urn somehow. He seemed to be somewhat impervious to pain, the early version of The Undertaker anyway, and no matter what you did to him, even though you could beat him, he always came back. But he didn't do things outside the ring. It wasn't like, oh, well, I just wave my hand and the ring falls apart. And then I just, you know, hoodoo voodoo you and you can't move your legs. And then nobody did that to The Undertaker. They didn't do that to Kane. Their supernatural connotations was more from their ability to withstand punishment, which is fine. But it is not fine to do what you're doing with Alexa Bliss. It is not fine. Because if you can take out Shayna Baszler from 15, 20, 30 yards away, how in the world do you expect that we're going to believe she's going to get in the ring and lose or even have someone have it be any competition for her ever for any reason? No, you've jumped the shark again, just like you always do. And now the Alexa Bliss character is going to get ruined. And instead of being a psychopathic schizo girl who believes that her doll talks to her, she is now some sort of a voodoo queen, some sort of a witch, who at the snap of her fingers can, I guess, can turn you into a frog, so I have no idea how you're going to beat her. Mike, once again, WWE does not know when to quit, and they jump the shark.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean, even you didn't like the broken character that they were doing and you got on it, but this is almost 10 steps past that, you know, maybe even 15, 20 steps past that broken character. I mean, yeah, he was going, yeah, Matt Hardy was going into the water and coming, the Lake of Redemption and coming out a different character. I mean, but this is 10 steps beyond that because this is not her character. And I mean, like you said, it wasn't enough for them to have Alexa Bliss as this groupie, half, you know, acolyte, whatever, of Bray Wyatt. It wasn't enough. And they had to take it 10 steps past that. And I don't get it.
I don't get it either because they had such a great performance from Alexa Bliss as, you see, here's the thing. Even if I'm Vince McMahon or I'm one of the head writers and I say, here's my ultimate goal. My ultimate goal is that Alexa Bliss takes over for The Fiend and she becomes the real force and he doesn't. And we're going to do it that way. The minute I see her performance where she snaps in and out of, I'm the old Alexa Bliss, I'm the new Alexa Bliss with her Nikki Cross match, I say, hold the phone. Hold the phone. I had no idea she could do it this well. This is way more compelling. This is way more interesting that she's sometimes in this character, but if she gets hit hard enough or you beat her enough, she tends to snap out of it for a minute. This is way more compelling and way more interesting, so let's just call an audible here and let's make her the damsel in distress that someone has to rescue from the clutches of the evil Bray Wyatt Fiend. That's it. That's the story to tell. I don't know what happened to Bray Wyatt. Apparently he's quit, or he has COVID, or he's in isolation, or I don't know what happened to him. Or they're undergoing, he's going to come back as yet a fourth character. I don't know what's happening to Bray Wyatt. We haven't seen him. We've seen a tiny little snippet of him saying he's been reborn. You've wasted the character. Basically speaking, The Fiend was the most popular character you had, and Alexa Bliss was the spice to that character. When you put them two together, it was magic for a while, and you couldn't leave well enough alone. You had to screw with it and screw with it and screw with it until you ruined it. And now you've ruined it, so congratulations. And it's going to take the women's division down with you, too, because how do you expect serious athletes like Charlotte Flair and Asuka, Rhea Ripley, how do you expect them to get in the ring and all of a sudden just fall down and hold their leg, oh, I can't move because Alexa Bliss is putting a hoodoo on me? Well, then I don't know. Why fight her then? It doesn't make any sense. And I don't care if you have Bray Wyatt come back and get involved in this somehow. It doesn't even matter where the story's going from this point. It doesn't matter because it's unsavable. I know what the WWE is going to do probably. They're going to pull this for a month or two and then go back to, we should have went back to the damsel in distress character. We can still do it. No, you can't still do it. No, you can't still do it. Because you've come up with a whole other origin that doesn't make any sense about Alexa Bliss and a doll she had when she was a child. What that has to do with Bray Wyatt, I don't know. It has nothing to do with him. You've basically written him out of his own show. That's kind of what you've done. It's absolutely ludicrous. And it made this match a mess and a mockery. Because not one of these women, by the way, seemed to be overly concerned about it. See, that's the thing. They looked for a minute and said, okay, Alexa Bliss is up there on a swing set. Oh, well, screw her. Back to the fight. Wait a minute. You just walked by there and there was no swing set. So if that swing set is there now, that is a supernatural act. I would be panicking. See, when something doesn't make logical sense, you can't really do it. Because every one of these people, remember when Asuka was so afraid of Alexa Bliss, she didn't even want to talk to her? Oh, well, Asuka's not afraid now. Although a gigantic swing set just appeared on a rampway by magic. Not afraid now. You would think that all of these girls would be like, what in the hell? Now, if that caused a legitimate distraction and somebody did a quick roll-up, I would have said, well, all right. But no, no, they just went back to fighting like, oh, well. Oh, well. So some magical thing just happened. So a UFO just landed in my lawn. Oh, well, back to mowing the lawn. That's kind of what it would be. Is that what you would do? I'm mowing my lawn, and oh, look at that, a UFO. That's curious. Look at that. Oh, little green men are getting out. Hmm. Oh, well, I got a lawn to mow. That's kind of what that would be. It doesn't make any sense. This is going to undermine the women's division. This is a huge mistake. See, Alexa Bliss wasn't in the women's division. Alexa Bliss was a captive of Bray Wyatt and his twisted world and his fiend character. And you took that story and you ruined it. And threw Bray Wyatt, I guess, under the bus. Because when's the last time we saw him? One time since WrestleMania. Since WrestleMania. And when's the last time we saw him before WrestleMania? Months and months and months. So how many times has Bray Wyatt appeared on TV in the last 6 months? Sorry, you've destroyed it. You've absolutely destroyed it. Anyway, we get Jinder Mahal back, but he's not with the Singh Brothers. He's with a new team. And he's fighting Jeff Hardy. Who, by the way, this exact same match happened on Main Event. I know a lot of you people don't watch Main Event, but this exact same match happened on Main Event. So I'm not thinking they think this is going to be anything big. Jinder Mahal's returned. I'm sure there'll be a storyline for him somewhere along the line with one of the minor belts, and that's what, where that's going to be, and that's about that. Jeff Hardy, at this stage of his career, they're just saying, you're a name, and if somebody beats you, I guess they get a rub from it, and that's all we need to use you for. Jinder didn't look particularly different or particularly exciting or anything. It was good to see him again, Todd, but, you know, wasn't anything special. Trying to get Todd on the phone. We're having a little problem with the phone line, so hang on. This happens often on Blog Talk. I don't know what the problem is that our phone lines tend to freeze up. But what I was saying basically is Jinder looks like the old Jinder. Fine. It's good. You know, everything's fine with that, but I don't see a big future. It's not like he came back and you said, oh, my God, you know, there's such a difference, and it looks like they're going to make him a world beater, and, uh-oh, we're going to see a whole big Jinder Mahal thing. No, he barely got – well, he got by Jeff Hardy in 5 minutes, but – and Jeff Hardy got plenty of offense. It wasn't like, oh, my God, he squashed a legend. Guess we're just going to have Todd call back because for some reason the phone lines are not functioning. At least his phone line isn't functioning. I don't know if Mike's will be. We'll find out. Mike, what do you think of this? No, the phone lines are not functioning. Okay, well, we'll have both guys just hang up and call back, I guess. So this is where it stands, folks. We get a new Jinder Mahal with a new team. I don't know. I guess the Singh Brothers are done. destroys Jeff Hardy, and well, he doesn't destroy him. He has a fairly actually competitive match with Jeff Hardy, but it's only 5 minutes. Beats Jeff Hardy clean, and we'll see where that goes. We then get a weird backstage thing where Riddle is sort of laughing at Randy Orton getting hit with a tomato. And he's telling the New Day, yeah, this is, you know, kind of funny. The look on his face was funny, and it was priceless. And what he didn't know, of course, is that Randy Orton's right behind him. So when Randy Orton turns around, or actually when, hold on 1 minute, see if we can get you guys back. When Riddle turns around, Randy Orton's right there. Makes Randy Orton a little upset. Mostly, though, it looked like he was upset with the New Day. He didn't say much to Riddle. And that leads, of course, to the tag team match. Not even sure at this point whether Randy Orton and Riddle are supposed to be heels, faces, combination of the both. I have no idea what they're supposed to be. But they're fighting the New Day, so I mean, I guess we'll take it as Randy Orton's still a heel. And I suppose Riddle's just going along with anything he has to say. Decent match. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the match itself. If anything, it's just that nobody really cared about the outcome, I don't think. You know, we like the New Day. I guess we're supposed to like Riddle, and we're supposed to, by proxy, like the RK-Bro tag team. So at the end of the match, he RKOs both of the New Day, leaving Matt Riddle there to say, oh, man, you know, how are we going to have any friends if you keep doing this? It is what it is. We're definitely having some trouble, folks. We're not even sure we're on the air at this point. Not really sure what happened here. We're going to attempt to get things straightened out. So bear with us a little bit. We're going to reboot, and we'll be back. Okay, so hopefully we're back on the air, and hopefully things are okay. Apparently we had a slight brownout or something, and that caused a disruption in the service. So let's see if we're back. Let me go to the phones and see if we got everybody. Mike, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. So we're talking about the RK-Bro situation. I mean, I guess we're supposed to be thinking of them along the lines as faces to some extent, Mike. Again, it looks like they're tipping their hand, and we see where this is going, which apparently is an eventual Randy Orton betrayal.
Right, and that's basically what we expect out of this, right? So, and that's really all I got to say about that. But one thing we didn't mention was the introduction of these two monsters that came out with Jinder Mahal. That could be a good thing.
I mean, it could be, but they've treated Jinder Mahal, in my opinion, just with this match alone, they've treated him like a mid-carder. He fought Jeff Hardy. He beat him, but, I mean, you know, it was close. And they didn't really do much interfering, and I don't know where this is going to go. This looks to me very much like another situation like we're getting where we had with Jinder Mahal before, except the Singh brothers were smaller and more athletic, and these guys are bigger. But aside from that, it looks like the same situation. I see Jinder Mahal as like Mr. Midcard again. And that's a shame because you had him going for so long, you could have brought him back with some big plans. Something that mattered. And right now I don't see it. I mean, maybe we'll see him go for, you know, the U.S. belt or something, but I don't know. Put it this way. For being gone that long, his return was underwhelming. To me, anyway, it was underwhelming. We talked about the Sheamus and Humberto Carrillo match. We then got Shelton Benjamin versus Cedric Alexander, a match I really thought they would save for pay-per-view. But they didn't. Instead, they gave it to us now. These two guys worked very well together. It was an excellent match. I have no problem with the match itself. I have a problem with the booking. I just don't understand why you didn't build this a little more. I have no idea why this shouldn't have been slow-moved to be a pay-per-view match or more than just what it is. Is this just a one-off? Is this all we're going to see now? And if it is all we're going to see, as much as I like Shelton Benjamin, if it is all we're going to see, why did you pick the older veteran against the younger guy? Why did you pick that guy to go over? I don't get it. It just seems weird. If you have a long story to tell, fine. But I don't see that. What I see, Todd, is a one-shot of, okay, we broke you guys up. We got you out of the Hurt Business. Now it's Shelton against Cedric. Cedric, you're the low man on the totem pole. Sheldon's winning. And if that's the case, I mean, you're going to promote Shelton Benjamin, but you're leaving behind Cedric Alexander, who's a much younger performer.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. Like you said with Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin, those two work really well together. One thing I don't like about the match last night, it was supposed to be the other way around, when Benjamin supposed to put over Alexander, not Alexander put over Shelton.
So if it was going to be a one-off, Mike, you would think that the younger guy would win. And if you thought it wasn't going to be a one-off, I have this match now.
Right, and that's the thing. I don't get that. I mean, this could have been a nice series of matches, a nice series of antagonistic matches that if they really wanted to go this way, they could do these matches, do this feud, and then at some point get these two guys back together. You
yep.
know? Because that's,
yep.
that's probably where they should have been headed, right?
That's what I would have done. I would literally have done damn near the opposite of what the WWE did, and that would have been that I would have had Shelton Benjamin say, never liked Cedric from the beginning. If you remember right, I was saying I was skeptical of him. I was warning him, if you screw up, I'm going to be the one to take you out. Have a bitter feud between these two guys until Cedric Alexander discovers it was really Shelton Benjamin who went to MVP and basically sold MVP on taking in Cedric, and then have Cedric come to Shelton Benjamin's aid when he's being double teamed or something, and they get back together. After they've both proven they're pretty equal in a series of fights where one wins, the other wins, one wins, the other wins. It's bitter, but it's almost like brothers fighting, and you get to that point. That's what I would have done with that tag team. It would have sort of reinvented that tag team and given them new vigor that, okay, now they're on the same – now they really are on the same page. So it's a shame. It's a shame there's no imagination in the WWE, and they just want to one-off these things. Damian Priest takes on Morrison. Well, actually, before that, we had Rhea Ripley and Asuka. God, what a mess this is. I don't care what anybody says. And I've gotten some people on my case about this. I don't like Rhea Ripley in WWE. I liked her fine in NXT. I don't like her in WWE. Confused? Slow? Out of place? And her matches are boring. It's as simple as I can put it. I don't know whether she's supposed to be a face, she's supposed to be a heel. I have no idea what she's doing. I don't think she has any idea what she's doing. The whole thing just is a clusterfuck. It's not working. It went from, wow, big debut, Rhea Ripley, to, oh, God, here she comes again in about 3 weeks. Boy, the WWE just has a knack of doing that, don't they? They can just squeeze all the life out of somebody until you say, oh, well, this is going to be a great debut. And then you're like, eh, it's nothing. She beats Asuka clean. Forget it. Asuka's done. Maybe they'll try to rehab her, but I don't think she's winning on Sunday, certainly. And I don't know where she's going to go from here. If she doesn't win on Sunday, She's going to be one of these people that's in the title picture for a little while, and she's going to fade into mid-card status. Now, speaking of people that they're going to squeeze the life out of, backstage was the Velveteen Dream. Now, the Velveteen Dream didn't wrestle, obviously, on this card, but the Velveteen Dream, it was backstage, which means that I guess they're going to call him up. They obviously have no intention of using him in NXT. And I think that was for, you know, politically correct purposes. But WWE probably doesn't have any such stipulation, so they probably figured, well, we'll bring him up here and we'll see how he gets over up here. Listen, if you use him the way you used to use him in NXT, he could be very big up here. Now, I want people to understand something, because we live in a weird world. Obviously, we know Velveteen Dream's problems, his legal problems. Do I think he was guilty? Yes. Do I know he was guilty? No. Does my opinion matter even a tiny bit in the eyes of the law? No. Does your opinion matter even a tiny little bit in the eyes of the law? No. He was not convicted of anything. He was not found guilty of anything. As a matter of fact, apparently, from what the WWE says, there was an investigation. They looked at the evidence. They said, we don't have anything. Now, if you want to be the type of person that says, I don't care what the law says. I don't care what I don't mean. He's this and he's that. I have a newsflash for you. Get yourself really close up to this speaker. If you knew, and believe me, I do know some. If you knew of what a lot of your favorite wrestlers got up to after the matches are over, you'd never be able to root for any of them again if that's what your politically correct stance is. You would have to quit watching wrestling. So for every single person who's sitting here saying, Velveteen Dream doesn't belong here, he did this horrible thing, guess what? Many, 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 many more horrible things were done. Many, 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 many times over by many, 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 many of the people that you're rooting for. And boy, you quickly forgave Riddle, didn't you? Everybody loves Riddle just fine. Do you remember that Riddle was accused of sexual misconduct? Don't care about him, right? So if you're going to yell and scream and holler about Velveteen Dream, and I know you're going to say, well, Riddle, at least the girls were of age. I have no evidence that Velveteen Dream did anything. Apparently, the district attorneys took a look at the evidence and said, we don't have a case. So all I can go on is what is being said. Now, you can sit here and argue famous people, they have a way of sweeping this under the rug. You're probably right. But at the end of the day, our opinion does not matter. The bottom line is he wasn't physically with a person. There's no evidence he even knew how old the person was he was talking to. There's really no evidence he did anything. So you can like it or you can lump it. But I'm telling you, just as a matter of record, that many of the people you idolized growing up and still idolize did some horrible things that would make anything the Velveteen Dream did look like charity work. Okay? So before you get on your high horse and say, I'm not giving him a chance, he's this, he's that, so is 75% of the rest of the people that you're currently, in love with. Can't wait to see every week. So, Mike, you know, they got to calm down a little bit. I think he's probably guilty of this, too. But at the end of the day, it is what it is.
It is what it is. And, frankly, you're right. And I'll go back to all the rumors we've heard about the Fabulous Moolah and what she did in her past. May she rest in peace, whatever. But there are rumors about her and what she did in her past to the wrestler, the female wrestler she trained. That would, people who remember her as this kind of comical older wrestler during the Ruthless Aggression era, you know. They came in and went through tables, and her and Mae Young and all this stuff at the time, who remember that, who remember her as that, they don't know about this stuff. They don't know what she got up to, or what the rumors say she got up to in her youth, right? So
I can tell you, as somebody who used to write for a wrestling magazine, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt that I saw behavior that if I ever wrote about it, part of the reason I was in with some of the wrestlers and I could write about them is because they knew I wouldn't write about some of the stuff I saw. I saw some stuff. I saw some stuff in WWE. I saw some crazy-ass stuff in ECW. I've even seen some stuff on Independence. I've seen it. And I was very, very, very close friends with a source of mine who was, I guess, what some people would call a groupie. And she gave me some great information and got me into some great parties and some great areas that I'm telling you, folks, if you're going to sit here and say, oh, the Velveteen Dream's a horrible person, you don't know a lick of a thing about what went on behind the scenes in a lot of wrestling. Crazy, insane, totally illegal, a lot of stuff. And you're still rooting for those people. I would never blow the whistle on them because it's not my job to do that. But I'll tell you this. Again, you can't be morally outraged at Velveteen Dream, who went through the legal process and was found to not even have a case, and expect to be taken seriously if you're going to root for people and idolize people that no longer wrestle, who did a million times worse. A million times worse. So I hope you give him a chance if he does debut, because he's extremely talented. And he could bring a real breath of life to Raw if he gets on Raw. And man, could Raw use a breath of life. So we get Damian Priest versus Morrison. Now, my first instinct was, Jesus, is Damian Priest going to wrestle Morrison and The Miz for the rest of his career? But I got to tell you this. I'm watching Damian Priest and I'm watching Morrison, and I'm saying to myself, I don't dislike Damian Priest. I think he's good, and I think you can use him. But if somebody impressed me in the match, if I didn't know either one of these guys, and you said, who do you think's the better bet to be, you know, to be pushed, I would have said Morrison. Morrison looked phenomenal in this match. He did a whole bunch of cool things. I actually enjoyed this match, but I mostly enjoyed it because of the stuff Morrison was doing. So I'm watching this match going, Jesus, man, are they underplaying Morrison? Now, once again, The Miz interferes. It costs Morrison the match. I don't know where this is going. I don't know whether Morrison's going to turn on The Miz. Could happen. Or it's just one of these things where Morrison's just going to be this clueless buffoon who just says, eh, well, that's my friend. I don't care. That's what he's doing. I don't know. I don't know where it's going. But Morrison put on a fantastic match, I thought, Todd, and I think he really stood out as a guy that they're underutilizing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Morrison, good thing they didn't miss the boat with him years ago. Well, like you said, they should have pushed him like years ago, but now they're doing it a little better with him, with Morrison.
Oh, they're doing it. He's a second banana to The Miz. And this is a guy who should be a main eventer. Really. I know he's not getting any younger, but this guy should be a main eventer. He's got all the skill in the world. He's got plenty of charisma. He's good on the mic. I don't know what more you want from the guy, Mike. I mean, again, you know, if I had been a total stranger to WWE and I watched this match with these two guys and you said, who's the blue chipper out of these two, I would have said Morrison.
I would have said Morrison, too. And frankly, I mean, look, when he was in Lucha Underground and And later on in Impact, he was a main eventer.
Yep. Absolutely.
You know? And think about it. I mean, look at it, and you look at him and basically his wife. They both deserve to be main eventers, but we'll talk about his wife at another time, you know. But the Morrison, and we know where Miz is headed. This is probably Miz's last run, and he's going to do whatever, make movies and probably make more movies and probably do more of his reality show. And I think he does some sort of game show or some like Wipeout or something for USA, something like that. So he's got that going on, and I guarantee you that if the opportunity came up for Morrison to go do movies, he'd take that opportunity because he's already doing
several. I mean, I've got Morrison in Hercules. I've got Morrison in, I think I got about three or four Morrison movies actually. So he has done some, and he's not a bad actor. He's not a bad actor. I mean, maybe him and The Miz will do a movie together. That would be interesting. Now, The Miz is somebody I'd hang on to. I mean, if The Miz said, I really don't want to wrestle full-time anymore, I'd say that's fine, but you're still signing a contract because we want to use you for X and Y and Z, and Lord knows. The Miz is a guy who, I'm going to be very honest with you, I know a lot of people don't like him. If there was such a thing as a lifetime contract to younger performers, the first person I would put their John Hancock on it would be The Miz. Because there's endless things you can use him for. You don't want him to wrestle? Fine. Then just have him do a talk show. You don't want him to be an on-screen personality as far as a wrestler? Fine. Put him in the broadcast booth. There's so much you can do with him that, to be honest with you, he's just a guy that I would just, hopefully he sticks around the WWE for a long, long, long time. And this is a guy who, when he first came in, the wrestlers were all like, yeah, he doesn't belong here. Well, I think he's proved he does indeed belong here. As far as Morrison is concerned, you're right. He, when Lucha Underground, he was a great main eventer. Impact, he was a great main eventer. This guy has what it takes. It's unfortunate that his debut ended up being a silly sort of a second banana to The Miz. You know, he's just a Bo Dallas or a Curtis Axel with a little bit more of a push. That's it. That's really all he is at this point. A shame, because, again, there's a lot you could do with Morrison. Anyway, we get to Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Lashley. And, of course, earlier in the night, MVP had approached Braun Strowman saying, you know, if Drew McIntyre does not make it into this match, it'd be a much better and much more fair match if it was yourself against Bobby Lashley. Now, at the time, Strowman had ordered him out of the dressing room, but naturally we knew Strowman was going to come in at some point. He does exactly that. He decimates Drew McIntyre, and then as God is my witness, I hope you have all DVR'd or taped or whatever you do with Monday Night Raw. I hope you've all done it. Please go back and watch Braun Strowman clearly tell MVP, I ought to hit you with this cane. But instead, I'm going to fuck your boy. That's what he said. That's what he said on Monday Night Raw. That's what he said. And then he destroys Bobby Lashley. I don't know what the hell Braun Strowman was thinking. I really don't know what the hell he was thinking. The look on MVP's face was priceless because he's like, this is inappropriate. This isn't going to work. He then does knock him through the barricade, knock him around a little bit. He leaves both guys lying. This is called, we want to make Braun Strowman look good before he's probably the guy to lose on Sunday. But you can still remember that memory where he took both guys out, so he's still just as tough as he always was. He just didn't win this time. That's what I'm looking down the barrel of. Not a good ending. Not a good ending. And I got to tell you that they're starting to screw up a little bit with Drew McIntyre. McIntyre looked really great and was cranking on all cylinders for a while. And now he's beginning to look sort of ineffectual and boring and not like he used to. And they're going to have to really pick this up. If you want to keep Drew McIntyre hot, you got to do something with him better than what you're doing, because Drew McIntyre is looking it's getting stale. That's the best way to put it. It's getting stale. And now that I look at the whole situation, I'm saying to myself, I don't see taking the belt off Bobby Lashley. And I don't know where that puts McIntyre or where McIntyre goes from here, Mike, but I'm not liking the way they're using them right now.
I'm not liking the way they're using them at all right now either. But one thing is whatever they're paying MVP, he needs a raise. The guy is doing excellent work. He's worth every bit of what they're paying him and probably a little bit more. I mean, that part in the back, you know, in the backstage area, very, very manipulative and very what you expect out of a manager like MVP, you know. I mean, that's some good stuff. He's been hitting on all cylinders for a while. Even though they split up the Hurt Business and all that crap, that wasn't his fault. He's still hitting on all cylinders as MVP. I mean, look,
there,
what else?
No question. MVP has been doing a fantastic job. Every time he's in a segment, and he gets a lot of segments now, surprise, surprise, every time he's in the segment, he's on where he has this ability to sell the fight. Whatever the fight's happening, whatever's going on, he has the ability to add an extra little whatever to it. Very much like Paul Heyman. So it's almost like you have, you know, a Paul Heyman on each brand, so to speak. Paul Heyman's able to do what he does on SmackDown. MVP is able to do what he does on Raw. And you're right. Whatever you're paying MVP, it's not enough, probably, because he has been your MVP. He's been the guy that when his segments come on, I turn the TV up a notch or two because I want to make sure I hear what he says, because I'm probably interested in it. So, yeah, and then, look, that's a big statement, because on Raw, there's not that many people who grab the microphone and I say, ooh, let me see what he's got to say. Before we get to our ratings, I do want to mention that Eva Marie got two segments. Angel Garza got one segment with Drew Gulak. Drew Gulak says, I've never been embarrassed in my entire career until last week. Really? Well, I don't know, man. If you go back in the history of Drew Gulak in the WWE, I'd say that was one of the least embarrassing things that's happened to you, actually, Drew, but okay. I guess they're going to start a feud between those two. That's fine. Give them something to do. Hope Garza comes out on top, because I think Garza should be on to bigger and better things. I mean, literally should be on to bigger and better. But we'll see what happens. Eva Marie's not going to work, folks. I'm trying to be optimistic, but I'm telling you right now, you couldn't have worse optics. You fire some qualified, top-notch professional wrestlers in the Iconics, Chelsea Green, and obviously Mickie James. And, oh, but wait, it's okay, because we got Eva Marie coming in, and she's going to be all about, I'm a model, good-looking, this is the exact antithesis of what you want from the women's division. I have no idea what you're doing. I have no idea what you're doing. Now, Mickie James says, well, to her credit, she was asked about it, and she says, well, you got to understand, Eva Marie's got over 1 million followers, and she really has made a name for herself outside the ring, and I understand her worth. Not everyone has to be a five-star wrestler to be a really, really, really successful part of the show. And I think if handled right, she could be a really, really, really successful part of the show. God bless her. It's going to be a train wreck. That's my opinion. It's going to be a train wreck. It's going to be an optical nightmare. Wait till the first match comes and she stinks to join up, because I got a feeling that's what's going to happen. And you're going to put her on Raw with Alexa Bliss. Well, maybe she'll put a voodoo spell on her. This isn't working for me, Mike. I don't know. The WWE has a very odd habit of having very poor optics.
It does. And look, what they did with Alexa Bliss is basically, and you remember Glow. You remember this woman, Big Bad Voodoo Mama? That's what
yep.
they've done with her.
Yep.
That's exactly what they've done with Alexa Bliss. And it's sad because she's much more talented than that, you know? But, yeah, you're right. And look, you know where this is going with her. They're going to put, eventually, they're going to end up with her versus Lana, and probably, Lana's going to probably end up winning that thing, but who knows, you know?
And Mike, if I recall, Glow had another, what she called the Princess of Darkness or something, and she wouldn't even wrestle. She would just get in there and hypnotize the person to kick their own ass. She would, point to the corner, and the person would run their own head into the corner. And say, this is what it's going to end up being with Alexa Bliss. It's going to be like a Glow satire thing.
Yeah. I mean, they're slowly turning the WWE into Glow.
It's true. I hate to say it, but it's true. It's just a nightmare. Anyway, let's go to the ratings here and remember, in your ratings is the go-home show. Now, there was nothing horrible about last night's Raw. As a matter of fact, we got the return of Jinder Mahal. I said they should follow up with Angel Garza, and they did, which is a good thing. We got to see a couple of really good matches with Damian Priest and John Morrison, and, of course, Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. It seems like they're utilizing their undercard a little more, which I applaud them for. But, man, it's like the same old matches over and over again when it comes to the main events. It's getting old. So I can't give it as bad as the last couple of weeks because it was slightly better. But for a go-home show, it was still weak. It didn't leave me really wanting to see any of the main matches any more than I did. So I'm going to give it a C minus. If it was a non go home show, I'd probably give it a C plus. But I just don't feel like it did its job. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm going to give it a C minus as well.
I just don't think for a go home show it was particularly successful, Mike. And for that reason, it could probably even go lower, but.
I'll put it to you this way. Last week's Raw was horrible. Okay?
Yeah.
Then they followed it up with, what was it? We all gave SmackDown Friday an A-minus, right? So
Yep. Then
we come, I'm going to go ahead and give it a C-minus again, but I will say this, and we haven't gotten there yet. We still haven't gotten to the SmackDown go-home show for this thing. And I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction here, Marcus, that this is going to – that SmackDown go-home show might very well be at least a B-minus show, if not more.
You know what the ironic thing is about it, Mike? I don't think they could – if they intentionally said, let's make a bad SmackDown show, it's still going to be pretty good because there's no way to screw up in one night – what you did right last week. Last week was so good, it's not possible to screw it up in one. It's just not possible. So I agree with you. I think that this SmackDown show, put it this way, I am greatly looking forward to this SmackDown show. I think this is going to sell the pay-per-view for me. This is going to be the one that makes me say, oh, I'm really looking forward to Sunday. I am not looking forward to the three-way match on Raw on Sunday. I don't care about it. I'm not looking forward to the women's three-way match on Raw on Sunday. I really don't care about it. You didn't make me care about it anymore. As a matter of fact, I probably care about it less. However, with what you did on SmackDown on Friday, if that was the go-home show, it would have been fine. So I can't imagine what they got in store this week. And I'm actually really, really looking forward to it, Mike. I think this could be one of the better SmackDowns of the year so far.
It really could. We know what could be with what could happen with the whole Jimmy and Jay and all that stuff, you know. But there are other things that I want to see what happens with the SmackDown Women's Championship. I want to see what happens with the Tag Team Championship. I mean, there are a number of things that I want to see what happens to. And look, as far as what we talked about, what you said earlier about what's his name, Bobby Lashley keeping the title. Well, that would play into our theory about bringing back Lesnar and having that match between Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley with of course, MVP and Paul Heyman going tete-a-tete, you know?
Well, I got news. If they do that, as much as I'm not a huge Brock Lesnar fan, if they do that, I'm interested in that match. That would sell me on Raw. That would definitely be something I'm interested in. Now, this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but I've been told by a pretty reliable source that the Usos are going to win the tag team championships by SummerSlam, and they're going to do it as heels. Now, that could change. That could absolutely change. But if they don't, then that indicates that maybe Jimmy Uso is going to break down and also go with Roman Reigns, which could be what ultimately happens. I'm going to tell you, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's exactly the opposite. I think you got to play this. Jimmy Uso is the outsider who refuses to go along with Roman Reigns stuff as long as you can. As long as you possibly can. Because that's the key to this. Once Jimmy Uso acquiesces and says, okay, I'm in, it ceases to be that interesting anymore. Right now it's interesting because it's brother. It's not really brother against brother yet because we don't know what Jay's thinking. But it's one brother with a polar opposite view trying to convince his brother that he's right. And everybody's sort of caught in the middle. That's what makes this interesting. Once you get them both on the same page either way, faces or heels, it'll be a little less interesting. So play this out as long as you possibly can, WWE. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm gonna give it a C- as well.
Right. So, okay, we've all said that it was better than it was for the last month, probably. But again, as a go-home show, I don't think this was great. When you say something is less bad, that's really not a raving review, is it? And that's all I can say this week about Raw. It was less bad, unfortunately. Anyway, we'll be back here on Friday. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.